You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are here to break down the Seahawks trading Frank Clark 2 days ahead of the 2019 NFL Draft, a trade that was broken to me by my NBA editor as I was driving from Seattle to Portland this morning. Tristan, how did you find out about the trade?
I found out about it on Twitter like everybody else. I don't know. You're a monster. Now, ESPN, all they do is break stories to each other, to the general public. I did learn about it. I think, well, first was the initial tweet from Ian Rappaport that said that they were outlining the deal. And then finally coming down through ESPN's Adam Schefter that the trade was done and kind of getting the details after that. But something that I think when we talked to Zach Whitman on Sunday night seemed more uncertain than it seemed yesterday. And when we got to yesterday, all of a sudden my perspective about it changed from the Seahawks are doing this for leverage to, oh, they're actually going to get a first-round pick here and they're going to make this deal.
That's interesting because I have a DM from you yesterday at 2 p.m. saying, feel like the Seahawks are leaking to drum up interest. So it was even more recent than that.
They drummed the interest.
They drummed up a lot of interest. I mean, the first takeaway from this trade, again, my editor's telling this to me, he doesn't know anything about the NFL, does not understand the context of it, just knows that it's something that ESPN is reporting and that I am a
He delivers every piece of information that ESPN is reporting to you.
Just Seahawks related. I mean, we happen to be all on the phone.
Like, did you hear about the Dustin Johnson round or whatever? I don't. This is me referencing golf.
Wow. That's the only time you'll ever hear the Pelton Cast reference golf. But my first takeaway is, wow, he keeps listing off things. I mean, I guess the third round swap favored the Chiefs. But to get both the first that they were seeking and also a second in 2020 seems like a huge coup for the Seahawks.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the third-round pick swap, you live with it. It's not that many picks. It's a third-round pick. The difference between an early third-round pick and a late third-round pick is not that great.
It's an eight-pick difference. The Seahawks swapped down from 84 to 92.
Yeah, I mean, by the time this draft is over, the Seahawks are going to have, like, four third-round picks, so it won't matter at all.
I mean, I guess we can get into that later. I mean, do we think the Seahawks are less likely to trade down now that they have two first-round picks? Are they more likely to trade down? I don't actually know how to read that.
It's complicated because they're going to have to try to figure out a way to trade down with themselves. they're in prime trade-down territory right there
really
at 29.
But they will.
They've taken one of the teams that they would trade down with out of the mix, so that's complicated things.
Yeah, but they went from one of the teams with the lowest amount of draft capital to now a relatively high amount of draft capital.
Sure, yeah. Adding a second first-round pick, yes. They still don't have the same kind of volume, and that's what they're going to have to go and get with these two draft picks.
Well, the other thing they don't have is kind of the spread or the dispersal of picks around the draft. I mean, I think the other thing that comes into play, so the Seahawks were already looking at having, what, 10 or 11 draft picks in 2020 because of the comp picks. To get the second rounder in 2020, I think makes it even more likely that they at some point trade a 2020 pick for a 2019 pick, even though that typically is a horrible thing to do.
That could happen. I mean, basically, the way that I look at it is coming into this draft, I mean, I want to talk about just our feelings about the trade in general, but when looking at the amount of draft capital this year and next season, if we do go into next season, assuming that they're going to have about 10 draft picks, adding a second-round pick to that haul, it makes me think that they could potentially use one of these first-round picks this year, too, to try to get a first-round pick next year. And if you go into next season with two first-round picks, two second-round picks, plus the amount that they're going to get after that and the comp picks and everything, they could go into the 2020 draft being the team that has the most draft capital to anybody in the NFL. And I think in that situation, you could really see Pete and John, provided that they are in charge at the time, have a lot of flexibility to do kind of whatever they'd like in the draft, go out and get whomever they want in the draft, and really come home with a generation of players.
All right, so the Seahawks now starting out with the 21st and 29th picks, but an even more glaring need for edge rushers, already a position that when we previewed the draft with Zach the other day, we talked about being something that we would like them to address in the early rounds, assuming they traded down and accumulated some more mid-round picks. Now it stands is far and away their biggest need, even above wide receiver.
Going into this draft, you know, Zach had mentioned on that preview podcast, this was under the assumption that Frank Clark was on the roster, that maybe the Seahawks would spend two of their early round picks, basically their first two picks, on wide receivers. And now that's not the case.
The first two picks that they don't currently have, by the way. Just presumed trade downs.
Yeah, of course. The the first two picks that they make, we have no idea where they'll come. But now what this means is they actually have, looking at the roster on Sunday night, there was nothing that stood out as like, whoa, that's a glaring weakness. And now they have something that's a glaring weakness.
You're way more optimistic about this than I am. I did not look at that roster and say, oh, there's no glaring weakness. I said there are a huge concern at wide receiver with Doug Baldwin's health and a huge glaring weakness at edge rusher. As far as someone
on
opposite
Sunday
Frank
night,
Clark.
They had the best wide receiver in the NFL in Tyler Lockett.
Oh, okay.
And on Sunday night, they had Tyler Lockett, who we know is a good NFL wide receiver, who statistically was one of the best wide receivers in the NFL.
Yeah, it's accurate.
They also had Frank Clark. They had Frank Clark, who is one of the best pass rushers in the NFL.
But you need more than one player.
I know that you need more than one player, but I'm saying that you don't look
you
at that and say, like,
you start two at those positions, and sometimes three at wide receiver.
Here. But that's why the situation is, when they go into this draft, they cannot draft wide receiver. They can't draft all these people talking about offensive linemen. No fucking way is an offensive lineman going to be drafted within the first two picks. The Seahawks need to draft the best edge rusher available with whatever ends up being their first round pick. And honestly, if we see
I don't necessarily agree with that. I mean, it depends how they view the pass rushers. I mean, if there's so
many... They
if
view the pass rushers well, because everybody views the pass rushers well.
If they think that LJ Collier is the best of these defensive ends and that they can get him either at 29 or at the top of the second round with a trade down, then they shouldn't take one with the first pick just because of the fact that that's their biggest need. Like, you also have to look at how the draft board goes and how you value those players.
Yes, I'm still stipulating with the first pick that the Seahawks make.
I'm saying that should not necessarily be their first round pick. If they think that the wide receiver depth falls way off and that the defensive end, the guy, there's, you know, a couple of guys that they like, or the one that they like the most is going to be available in the second round. Like, you don't just pick your biggest need with your first pick. That is not a good way to approach the
draft. Okay, I mean, I suppose I could see a situation where they approached it as like, depending, the problem with analyzing a Seahawks draft before it happens is that you don't know the picks that they're going to have. You don't know the arsenal that they're going to be playing with. But my assumption is that they are going to make one first round selection and then get a lot of picks after that, like a 2-3-4 or something like that, or get a 2-3 and a 5 or something like that for the 21st pick. Does that seem reasonable to you?
It does. I mean, you know, I think you were on the verge of saying that if someone fell, they could even consider moving up.
That is what I was going to say, though, is if they want to use the trade down pick as, say, the 29th pick, but if they're at 21 and somebody like Josh Allen ends up falling, I wouldn't see it,
Is there any chance of that?
No, probably not. I don't know really roughly what range like Montez Sweat is going to go in, but if they for some reason look at it as like a 3 edge rusher group, or something like that.
I mean, I think if Montez Sweat slips, it's because of the fact that he gets past the Seahawks. Actually, that's how he slips, or they trade down with someone who doesn't take him.
But somebody like that got
more flexibility.
They have more flexibility, and I wouldn't be shocked if there was, for some reason, there was a run of other players earlier. Tight ends are going like crazy, quarterbacks are going like crazy, and edge rushers get pushed down a little bit. Then the Seahawks have, by making this trade, the flexibility to do what they'd like to do, and they didn't have that flexibility before this without giving up 2020 capital.
Yeah, that's true.
And now they do have the flexibility to do this because they can turn one of these first-round picks into a lot of other picks. Or maybe they make both selections. You know, like, it's not unheard of, and then they go out and get a first-round wide receiver and a first-round edge rusher.
The early pick that they're missing is the second-rounder. You can say that the 29th is effectively a second-rounder for them.
The other thing that we got was news today. So we got the report 9 hours ago also from Rashawn Gary that what they're calling a defensive tackle has a labral tear from college. He thinks he can play this season and then possibly will have surgery afterward. So that's something that could be a concern to teams. And we could see somebody like this end up, if that's a big enough concern, maybe Rashawn Gary falls till the second round or to the third round, and the Seahawks are able to pick up sort of one of the coveted edge rushers, and then maybe a little bit more, you know, like a higher risk player. Because again, they all of a sudden have some flexibility.
Yeah, I mean, that to me is more of a move that makes sense for the Seahawks in terms of taking an injury risk than Jeffrey Simmons, who we talked about with Zach, who is out this season with an ACL tear. And so that would be an issue, you know, in terms of taking the injury risk that...
Well, I mean, this is still a pre-draft report. We don't know, right? Like, going into the draft, I don't think you would have a report that a player... They would go way out of their way to not say that he was going to miss the year.
Fair. I mean, it could be spun from the agent. You don't know which side that is from.
But so that could be something where it's like all of a sudden they're able to, maybe they like Rashawn Gary, but they do have a need to get somebody who's going to play this year, and they pick up both Montez Sweat and Rashawn Gary.
Although Montez Sweat has his own concern. We didn't talk about that on the podcast, but he has a heart condition. That it was part of the reason he decided not to attend the draft combine.
Oh boy. Okay.
So
maybe we make like 10 second round picks of risky players, and like three of them are going to turn into stars.
There you go.
This is the plan.
I'm sorry, that was actually testing at the combine that revealed that he had a heart condition. That's why he's not attending the draft, because of the concern that he could also fall on draft day.
Interesting. Okay. But so the Seahawks, I guess, looking at this sort of like what they're going to do post this Frank Clark trade, are they going to find somebody who can replace the production? No. Are they going to draft an edge rusher that they think is going to play from day one? Yes, because they're going to have to. Yes. And we'll talk about kind of what this means for the Seahawks 2019 season later. But as far as this trade is concerned, and the reason that I feel good about it is not just this flexibility that they're getting in the draft, is because whomever they draft, wherever they end up, are going to be making $18 million less than Frank Clark is going to be making for the next 4 years, something in that range. And the thing that it does give you is it gives you flexibility on the roster too.
I don't know if that math checks out, for the record.
Dalton Cast math?
No, I guess it is right. That is right.
There we go.
Number 29 pick will have a cap hit of $1.96 million.
So. Crushed it. Crushed it on that math.
Although Frank Clark's cap hit this year probably will not actually be that high on his negotiated deal.
But that is so much money that can go to so many different places, right? To build out the rest of the roster instead of just investing everything into Frank Clark when you're talking about. So I think after that Russ deal, like all of a sudden Frank Clark kind of looked a little bit more expendable and kind of needed to be a little bit more expendable. In the same way, it's like if you want to re-sign Bobby Wagner and you want him to be part of your future, which I think a lot of Seahawks fans would say that they do, and would say that Bobby has a lot left in the tank.
Yeah, I think 100% of Seahawks. I don't want to know the Seahawks fan is like, they got to get rid of Bobby Wagner. You know what they need to do.
I assess that defense and I see one weakness.
I mean, I think it's Jaron Reed that is like more the plausibly debatable. Do you want to pay him as much as it's going to take for him coming off a 10.5 sack season? But no, he's also the only player on your roster who had more than 6 sacks last year. But we'll get to that, I guess. You're insistent we not talk about that too early.
No, I'm just saying that from this trade, you can't look at this trade as, is it Frank Clark or this player? Because it's Frank Clark plus these draft picks, plus the draft capital and the flexibility in the draft to go out to get whoever they want, plus $18 million.
Yeah.
I mean, like, this trade to me, if, you know, just as far as grading it goes, it's a solid A trade, right? The value that they're getting from Frank Clark, who we love Frank Clark. This is nothing about Frank Clark.
We love his production.
We love Frank Clark.
Conflicted feelings about Frank Clark's history and his treatment
Frank Clark
of third brother Natalie Weiner.
Yeah, that was rough. Really, they should have traded him that second. But we love Frank Clark as a player, right? And the impact that he makes to the team. But at the same time, there are other players who make an impact. And, you know, if you're talking about basically the types of players that you really want to invest in long term are quarterbacks, 100%, probably edge rushers, but even still, it's a tough pill to swallow.
I mean, I do think edge rushers is probably a good place to invest money, but what you're talking around is my adage when I'm talking about NFL or NBA trades that I'm grading. You don't trade for players, which is what people think about. They think about who got the better player in the trade. You trade for contracts. And undoubtedly, a first-round pick is going to, on average, be a much better contract than Frank Clark making market value on this, renegotiated deal. Bob Condotta retweeted yesterday. Ryan McChrystal of Bleacher Report put together a list yesterday of first-round pick trades since the installation of the rookie scale for first-rounders and other draft picks. The Raiders trading for Richard Seymour in 2011. The Raiders trading for Carson Palmer in 2012. The Buccaneers trading for Darrelle Revis in 2013. The Colts trading for Richardson in 2014. Somehow left off the Percy Harvin trade, which was Seahawks in 2013. Seahawks trading for Jimmy Graham in 2015. Patriots trading for Brandon Cooks in 2017. Then the Rams again trading for him in 2018. Vikings for Sam Bradford. Cowboys for Amari Cooper. Bears for Khalil Mack. And now Browns for Odell Beckham. First off, you look at the defensive players on this list. There aren't many of them. It's not a great track record. I mean, Richard Seymour was kind of at the point where he was going to lose his value, and I don't think that's the case at all with Frank Clark. But I guess Khalil Mack, who got two first-round picks, is the only other defensive player on this list. This is rare to get this kind of value for a
That's
defensive
pretty
player.
crazy, and but not even just the first round pick, to get a second on top of it.
I mean, yeah, especially you looked at the Dee Ford trade that the Chiefs made alternative on the other side of it, where they were trading away Dee Ford a couple months ago. You thought that was going to set the template for what Frank Clark was going to get. Then, so the Seahawks could be getting that second round pick that the Chiefs got from the 49ers for Dee Ford. Now, that would require the 49ers to be better than the
That
Chiefs
would
next
actually be
season, which
bad
is
for us.
a little unlikely. Yes, that would be very
We're
troubling.
cheering for the Chiefs pick.
Very troubling on the FC1. But I'm just saying, they could get that pick and then also get a first round pick for the Chiefs on top of it. That's incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the other thing that you mentioned, about trading for contracts and not players, is value, right? And when you look at the idea of getting value over what a player is paid, which is not a stat, but it would be an interesting stat, but the amount of value relative to the contract and the chances of getting any sort of added value above the contract for Frank Clark. I mean,
Right.
look, if you have a very expensive player that meets that value, that's a great thing to have. But
Yeah, I mean, you can take this logic too far. Like, should the Seahawks have traded Earl Thomas for a first round pick when he was up for his second contract? Like, no, probably not.
I'm saying, if you can get 100% of value on a very large contract, that's usually a win, right?
Yeah, but it's still not as good as having the first round pick.
But even then, the chances of Frank Clark, of getting 100% of value from Frank Clark to basically him playing to the level of this contract that he's getting, pretty slim, right? Like, if you put it percentage chances wise, it would be like, what do you think the percentage chances of Frank Clark actually being like exceeding the value of the cap hit, right? It's like 10%.
Exceeding is different than playing too. I mean, look, if he continues to play at this level and stays healthy, he'll be fairly paid.
It's
But the
like
odds of
a
him being
window of
underpaid are
like
pretty low.
10 to 60% of like exceeding or being paid to the value. Whereas a first round pick, almost any first round pick of them exceeding the value of what they're getting paid, is pretty high.
And then also just the potential to be way more valuable than
Yes.
that salary, which again would be very difficult. Like, Frank Clark would have to become Khalil Mack to be way more valuable than that salary. I mean, the Ford Clark comparison is fascinating to me. You pointed out that Clark is younger. It's about 2 years in terms of difference, and he's maybe been, a little more consistently productive than, Dee Ford had the injuries 2 years ago where he only played six games, had two sacks, but still, I mean, I would have assessed their value as much more similar than the trades imply.
Yes, absolutely. So, I mean, the Chiefs clearly were looking for pass rush in a situation where they have Pat Mahomes relatively cheap. They're going all in. The Chiefs are going all in, and they felt like Frank Clark was that much better of a pass rusher than Dee Ford was. So be it. I mean, there are a few times that the Seahawks were on that list, and really none of those times do you say to yourself, like, wow, that was a great trade,
No,
that we
or
look
we would
back on
do
it.
that again. No, you would definitely not do the Percy Harvin trade again. You would probably not do the Jimmy Graham trade again. I don't, especially because Max Unger played
Especially
so
with
well,
Max
though.
Unger.
But
Yeah.
he would have been cut either way. Like, I don't think you can look at that element of the trade. It was really about the first round pick. But still, I mean, Jimmy Graham, best tight end in Seahawks history, still not worth a first round pick because of the salary. which in his case,
Jeremy Stevens is just there.
Jeez. Don't take us down that road. Sheldon Richardson trade wouldn't redo. Dwayne Brown trade might, on the borderline. But anyway, the history of the Seahawks trading high draft picks for
Dwayne Brown trade.
Okay, so maybe you say they're 1 out of 4. And if you want to go back all the way to the Deion Branch trade, like, it's not a good track record of when the Seahawks trade high draft picks for veterans.
Also, think about this from the other team. There are two teams that were on that list who traded first-round picks twice that you mentioned in the last decade.
It was the Raiders.
The Raiders and the Seahawks, which you don't want to be on a list with the Raiders and the Seahawks. But who are the teams who this year traded players for first-round picks? It's like, all of a sudden, these teams are learning from their mistakes of the past, right? Granted, it was pretty distant history with the Raiders, with Carson Palmer and Richard Seymour. That was long before the current regime. But the Raiders this year go out and trade two players for first-round picks. And the Seahawks, with the same regime, are looking at that and saying, look, we've done this thing before. We have traded for high picks for players and paid them, and it has not worked out well. Right, they won a Super Bowl with Percy Harvin, but the amount that Percy Harvin affected them winning that Super Bowl was pretty minuscule. And then they're turning around a year later and trading him for a fifth round pick or whatever.
Wasn't great.
So, would the Seahawks like to have that draft capital back? 100% they would. The reason that we're in the situation that we're in right now with the roster is that the roster wasn't able to sort of like rebuild through the draft is because of these trades.
I mean, they're factoring it. The reason they were in the situation where they didn't have much flexibility in the draft was very explicitly because of trades.
If you want to do a flow chart of the Seahawks, let's say that we're starting in 2013 or whatever, 2012. They went all in on the Jimmy Graham and the Percy Harvin trades, which hurt their draft capital for a period of time, which meant that their roster wasn't as deep as they'd like it to be. There's other stuff in there, whatever. And then to try to make up for their roster not being as deep as they wanted it to be on the offensive line or the defensive line, Tom Cable excluded, they traded players, or they traded capital to get players who are sort of like win-now players in Dwayne Brown and Sheldon Richardson, and now they're left with 4 draft picks and a team that doesn't feel as complete as it is.
Yeah, and then also the other aspect of it is when your depth isn't as strong, that means you have to go out and sign other teams' free agents and you don't get comp picks. So
yes.
Yeah, it's a there's a virtuous cycle of trading veterans for draft picks.
I've told you my feelings about this offseason, and I feel like this has been a reactionary offseason, but it's been a very good offseason for the Seahawks, and one where they're like, we don't want to make the same mistakes that we made before. We don't want to spend or make too many signings that are going to cost us comp picks, right? Because they looked back that same season and they saw the same thing that we all did, right? Is that they got value from basically one player that they signed that cost them all those comp picks. And now here they are in a situation that they have 4 draft picks. So this year they're going out and they are getting draft capital and they are not overspending on players that they can trade to get draft capital back, because draft capital is one of the most important things you can have in the NFL alongside an elite quarterback, and that's what the Seahawks have done this offseason.
Another thing that's worth pointing out here is it's pretty cool, to use his own parlance, that a coach Pete Carroll's age is willing to sign off on such a future-focused trade.
Yes.
Is not really all in on we need to win right now. But we should talk about the fact, like, the flip side of this is the Seahawks are going to pay the price. The 2019 roster is not going to be as good. Would you like to know the sack totals of players currently, 2018 sack totals of players currently on the 2019 Seahawks roster?
Okay.
Jaron Reed, 10.5. Cassius Marsh, 5.5. And then number 3 is Quentin Jefferson and Jacob Martin tied at 3.0.
Oh boy.
I mean, I think they're excited about Jacob Martin's future. I think they maybe think that Rashim Green, who only had 1 sack, I forget what our over-under is. We never did this. We never went back and revisited it, but the season preview when we were doing it, the live podcast with our friends at Tasteful Profanity, the over-under on Rashim Green's sacks was, I think, like 17.5 after the preseason. It was something like that.
I mean, really, when you look at it, like, I guess talking about so what this will mean for the Seahawks pass rush in 2019, a lot of pressure on those interior players, and B, somebody from that group of Jacob Martin, Rashim Green, others, somebody is going to have to step up and be a legit NFL pass rusher.
I mean, they don't necessarily have to if the Seahawks draft at least one, and then Cassius Marsh is kind of the veteran of that group. But again, there's nobody that you're looking at and saying...
That's a bleak future you're talking about.
It is, but there's nobody you're looking at and saying, that guy commands a double team. And that's an issue they're going to face next year. I mean, that's just going to be the reality of the situation. The Seahawks are not as likely to make the playoffs in 2019 as they were, you know, with Frank Clark on the roster. But I think that's worth it for all the benefits it's going to provide over the next 4 years.
Yes, I agree. I mean, we have a roster right now that it's in the position with Russ to sort of set up and reload. We keep talking about sort of this next generation. I mean, it does kind of make you think about Bobby Wagner and whether he'll be what he means long term to the Seahawks, if that's what you're talking about. I think the team is going to be better than you're describing right now, because they were starting a lot of young players last year on defense, and you're only talking, I mean, Frank Clark is an important player, but you're still only talking about taking away one of them. And whether the relative progression of sort of all of these other young players on defense will equal to what Frank Clark was last year. But their needs, obviously their needs. And I think that we're willing to sacrifice a little bit of whatever the potential for the 2019 season would be to reload, to even consider being a legit Super Bowl contender 3 years from now, 2 years from now. And something where they have a roster that's competing at the highest level. You know, when you look at sort of like the Saints, the second generation of the Saints, right? That's what we're rebuilding toward. And a lot of that for the Saints came through drafting well, right?
Yeah.
And when you have a lot of draft capital, you usually end up drafting well because it's about volume. We've talked about this over and over and over again. It is about having volume, and in particular, the volume of high picks. And that's what they added in this trade.
I was trying to figure out who the player was they traded for Jimmy Graham. The draft pick that they got for Jimmy Graham. It was Stephon Anthony. I guess he did not end up being very great, did he?
All right. That was who the Saints drafted with that pick?
Yes.
Oh, I thought it was like Marcus Williams. But the Vikings with the Percy pick drafted, what's his name? A very good corner.
Who I also cannot remember off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm. Him. Max with two X's.
It's been a long time. Xavier Rhodes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anything else to add on this trade?
I was already looking forward to the draft, but now the Seahawks are much more of a player in this draft. So at the very least, maybe the team will be worse in 2019, but we're going to have a lot more fun on draft night.
That's true, and they might actually make a first-round pick now. So,
oh boy.
We'll be back with the regular weekly pod in your... I was going to say inboxes, but I guess that's not really it. In your podcast feeds Thursday morning after I'm back from Portland covering Game 5 of the Blazers Thunder series here. We'll talk about that, of course, in addition to talking more about the Seahawks draft. And then
and then time will happen.
And then we'll recap. And then we'll recap the NFL draft at some point subsequent to that.
Great.
All right. Thanks for listening.
Thanks. Can you delete that? I want to talk about that at the end, because I want to talk about what we think about the trade right now, what the team does in the draft, and then about the Seahawks next year, because that's the draft thing is going to influence that conversation.
But everyone is going to start by saying, oh, the Seahawks aren't as good this year. So we should probably address that before we talk about, well, here's the reasons you should do that anyway.
But you can't talk about that without talking about what they're going to do in the draft.
All right, I suppose. I don't know where the fuck we were now.
This should be the podcast. This is the podcast.
This is an excerpt at the end. We read it.
I don't know where the fuck we were now.
But if the person that they like the most, if it's like, you know, LJ Farrell from... LJ Farrell... I should go look up the names of these players before.
LJ Farrell is probably like a basketball player from like 2004 Baylor.
No, I think it's. I think I've combined the names of LJ Fuller and Clelin Farrell.
Oh yeah, Clelin Farrell's a person.